kids today don't know anything about Rip Van Winkle. They don't know the what do they even teach them in schools?
All right.
All right. So it's February, and I'm Amy.
I'm Casey.
And you might be wondering, why did we choose to do Twilight now?
For Shipwreck.
For Shipwreck.
I mean, you know you're listening to Shipwreck, right? But like, what? Let's just get it out
of the way. But why now, you might say? Why didn't you start with Twilight? It's the obvious one. And I'll tell you. For any of you out there who don't obsessively pay attention to book-related news, in February of 2015, the movie 50 Shades of Grey came out. And 50 Shades of Grey, as you may or may not know, rose to its current level of infamy as fan fiction based on the Twilight series. Of course, after it became hella popular, E.L. James started denying that it was ever fanfic, even though it literally started on fanfiction websites, and now she makes millions of dollars. So it graduated from being a terrible book to a terrible movie, and, you know, we wanted to celebrate that.
But everything in it is legitimately consensual.
Well, except for the sleepwatching.
Oh, the sleepwatching is super creepy.
Yeah.
Two books in a row with sleepwatching, too. Did we really do that?
It's so creepy. Yeah, we did. We did two books in a row with sleepwatching.
And they're both basically the same guy. Like, this is John Galt.
Edward
like,
is totally John Galt. I ship Edward and John Galt.
That'd be so great.
Yeah. Someone write that. Someone write that and email it to us. ShipwreckSanFrancisco, all spelled out, @gmail.com. Please write us an Edward Cullen / John Galt fic, please.
If you do that, we'll have you on the show.
We'll make a podcast. We'll put it on our fucking town. Like, somebody write that shit because it's golden. 800 to 1200 words. Send it in.
Edward, you were alive during my technological renovation.
Oh, yeah, because he's like hundreds of years old. So he totally could have been there. This is even legit. So what's Shipwreck, Casey?
Shipwreck is very simply, we take a great book.
Or in this case, a terrible book.
Whatever. Someone thinks it's great. We take a popular book, we mine it for characters, we pull six characters out of that, then we find six writers, we assign each writer a character from that book, and we ask them to put that character into dirty fan fiction, sexy times scenarios. We ask them to write these pieces, give them to us, and we invite our thespian in residence, Baruch Porras Hernandez, to read them aloud to an audience of kind of drunk people.
At a bookstore.
A lot of people on first dates.
Yeah, so many first dates. That's like a thing in San Francisco right now, is like first date at Shipwreck.
And that's what we do. We did, as Amy said, Twilight for February. And the characters. Let's just get right into this thing.
Yeah, yeah. So we went to the villain first. So the villain of the story, or one of them, they face so many challenges. I don't
for
even know how they
no
survive.
Plot, there are
for a
like
book with no plot,
three villains.
There are like a lot of villains.
Like 20 minutes pass in the entire story.
It's true. So James is the villain. James is a tracker, which I think means he's like a vampire, but also evil because of something like the way Bella smells.
Yeah, he hangs out at REAI a lot and buys guns
and Radio Shack.
These Oakleys look good on me.
Meyer literally describes him as, quote, average looking. So you're welcome for the vivid imagery.
James.
Where were you that night? Snapped James from behind his sheriff's badge. Bella balanced her hands on the sides of her head. Wooden chair and rocked slightly side to side. Doing homework? With whom? None of your business, officer. Bella's eyes strained to stay open as the piercing white light of the interview lamp compelled her to weaken her grip on the safe holding her memories. Don't toy with me! Those cuffs can get much, much tighter. James reached across the cold steel interview table, grabbing Bella's wrist and shoving his thumbs against the bracelets. Click. Crunch. Bella's hands shook while her wrists collapsed under the feeble strength of the local detective shackles. She frowned. You're gonna have to do a lot more than break my bones to get a confession out of me. I don't know where Alice is, and even if I did, I'd never tell someone as cruel, as heartless as you. But Bella, snarled James, I have something you want. Oh? You kept Edward's cool, musty, bloody breath in a tiny glass jar for me to hold and caress? That never opened? No, idiot! You see, I paid a visit to your father earlier today, given it was his day off and all. So Suddenly, his sheriff's badge made a lot more sense. It certainly did look like Charlie's. Bella's eyes widened. That must mean... She felt her breath quicken and her throat pulsate with tender longing. Her left lung collapsed under the pressure of her heaving chest. James grinned. He slowly, deliberately reached into his jacket pocket. Bella heard the familiar crinkle of brown paper. She knew. Oh God, she knew. How could he? How did he find out? James's hands gripped something sturdy and rough, something thick and solid. Something succulent. His attuned senses trembled with the anticipation of uncovering his perfect lure. I know your greatest fantasies, Bella, James said across the now seemingly infinite depth of the table. I know what you want. I know what you need. I know you can't possibly hope to resist. And there it was. Two hunks of rye. Two slices of provolone. Two tablespoons of mustard. And two gorgeous, golden, crystalline, epic helpings of homemade fish fry. Bella's broken wrist creaked under the pressure of their metal chambers, grinding together and rumbling involuntarily with pain as her mouth watered the average rainfall in Portland. Why? Why did it have to be fish fry? Smell it. I can't smell it from here, whimpered Bella, her upper lip curling into noticeable vinegar strokes as she chomped into her lower in classic style. Just give it to me. I can't tell you where Alice is, but you can at least watch me eat something that you'd most certainly wish you could taste. James didn't flinch. His years of tracking humans and vampires provided him with the peripheral skill of complete dispassion. Or so he thought. For as Bella's left ankle snapped out of desire and her lips twitched with ferocity, James found his morally stoic mind begin to churn with debaucherous intent. His olfactory nerves thrust electrical impulses at his brain, screaming, "This! This is what you've been searching for!" Let's not talk about Alice. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about how badly you want this sandwich in your mouth. Bella stood up on the chair. She leaned forward into the interview table, yanking the manacles taut against the chair's armrest behind her. She put all of her measly body weight onto her hands. The handcuffs plinked metal against metal. James watched with amusement as her wrists splayed sideways and she sank her teeth into her lower lip to stifle the agony. While her expression remained fixed like an arrow, she looked him right in the eyes. Her right shoulder popped out of its socket. James, I want that sandwich. Anywhere. He thought he had her right where he wanted her. He thought that at any minute he could whip the dialogue back to Alice's whereabouts and end Bella with a breath. But he couldn't. She was right. He needed to know how it felt. He needed to know the chemical explosion of teeth sinking into crust and crumb, of tongue lapping at cardboard gray cheese and macerating it with crunchy grease of salt and sweet and soft and rough and bitter and sour. Oh God, how he needed to know it! To be able to taste as a human again, even vicariously through any orifice, would be beyond comprehension. It would be divine. Bella's right ribcage imploded at the knowledge that she had, for once, enticed a man without once referring to her blood type. James placed the manna from heaven at the edge of the table closest to himself. Take it. Her eyes never leaving his, Bella bent her whole upper body, hips and all, forward onto the table. Her jaw unhinged like a nipple clamp about to snap onto a nursemaid's oversized teat. James took a sharp, unfamiliar breath. His big blood sucker sprang into attention. More confused than anything else, he couldn't help but take the opportunity. Turning his body to the right side, James geared up and then swung his meaty member at the object of desire, plugging the sandwich directly into Bella's equally attentive lips. Her mouth trap sprang shut, her teeth all shattered simultaneously. But Bella would not be deterred. James crawled onto the table, googly-eyed with awe and desire. Bella's newly surfaced gums squished themselves through the crust, the provolone, and with a helpful tap on the top of her head from James's outstretched member, right through the painfully brittle fish skin sinking into the meat itself. To his memory, not even the brutality of the American Revolution generated such a deep communal hunger as that which he and his newfound avatar now shared. That's when Bella's body began to writhe with ecstasy. Her eyes rolled while her tongue hungrily gathered maximum amounts of the partially macerated foodstuff into her damp maw. Well! Screamed James into her ears, kneeling by her face, barely able to contain either himself or his erect companion, wishing he could feel her feelings and taste her taste and live in her essence and become her. Bella's eyes bulged out of their sockets. The veins in her cheeks and her neck swelled. Her head shook violently from side to side. Her mouth began to foam. She gave James a look that cut him into the quick and pierced deep into his soul. She smiled. You'll never know. Her forehead sagged onto the table as she fainted peacefully into a delicate slumber. James's Vampirius Maximus came desperately into his briefs, hoping against hope that sexual pleasure could override his need for need. Nothing. She was out, and he was out of luck. As James gathered his tools and walked out of the police station, he felt a light spring in his step. He had met his match, and he would never stop hunting for it.
That was James, the first character from Twilight, as written by the pseudonymous writer Full Foul. That's FullFoul. If you know what that means, feel free to hit us up on Twitter at ShipwreckSF.
Hashtag ShipwreckSF.
We don't do the ads.
We don't do the ad. But, you know, you gotta use the SF. It's important. ShipwreckSF. Otherwise, you'd be talking about the Lusitania and porn, and nobody wants that. You gotta keep your porn separate from your actual shipwrecks. It's very important. So next up, every girl, Bella Swan, the plucky protagonist of our story, who lacks any memorable qualities, except maybe being clumsy, which was apparently intentional on the part of Stephanie Meyer, because you're supposed to be able to put yourself in her shoes, so I hope that you enjoy doing that for the next 7 minutes.
It was Edward's idea, of course. The sex tape. I've never done anything like it before. Not because it hadn't crossed my mind, but because I usually associate these kinds of exploits with celebrities and other types of glamorous and vapid people I will never be. But Edward promised to keep it just between us, so I agreed. I tend to be really boring at the thought of doing something raunchy, making me feel like I could be more of a developed character in the story of my own life. Plus, when your boyfriend's a beautiful and perfect specimen of nature, it's hard to argue. Well, I innocently asked why he wanted to make a visual record of us getting primal. Edward said it was for my own good. There may come a time, Bella, he said slowly, so that I would understand every word. When I may have to go away for a while. My face twitched a little then. A strange sensation, since I often find it hard to outwardly express emotion. Nevertheless, I could feel tears coming on. Edward's inability to be wholly truthful since that first time we met, and especially during our intimate encounters now, had always made me angry, and when I'm angry, I cry. I can't help it. It's melodramatic, I know, but there's just no stopping the sheer intensity of my feelings. I'm a teenage girl, after all. Hormones course through my veins with the same feverish tenacity as blood. What do you mean, go away? I demanded, biting my lip. My vision blurred slightly, and even though I tried to get a hold of myself, I could feel a single tear sliding down the smooth surface of my otherwise pale and unremarkable cheek. I just, sometimes, I leave for no reason whatsoever. It's just something I do. I don't know. Edward drew me closer and brushed his finger beneath my eyes, catching the small droplet of water, which were now cascading like the falls you'd find all over Forks. It's my nature, Bella, Edward continued. So I want us to make a tape in case it happens. In case I go and you miss me so much, you fall into a deep, dark depression and can do nothing but sit on a chair for days on end, watching the seasons go by, totally helpless in your longing for me. I want you to have something to remember me by, something that can whet your appetite until the day I return. You don't deserve my moodiness or my unpredictable and manipulative behavior, but you do deserve to be satisfied. We looked longingly into each other's eyes, smoldering like we always did, and I could tell he really meant it. And that if this horrible day ever came when he just up and left, with no real explanation, he wanted me to be taken care of. I realized then that no one in my life had ever thought of what was best for me. Not my mom, or Charlie, or even my dumb one-dimensional friends from school. But Edward understood. It was like he penetrated the very heart of my soul and figured out exactly what I needed without even requiring me to say anything aloud. He was so damn good that way. I opened my mouth to say thank you, but he cut me off before I could even utter the words. Also, he said, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you I'm worried that if this happens, if I leave you for an indeterminate, excruciating amount of time, that you may be swayed by other, more enticing prospects. Like who? I gasped, clearly taken aback. Let's just say there are some guys in this town more animal than me. And with that, Edward effortlessly whipped off his shirt. He flexed the deliciousness of his muscles, which had grown taut and defined since we'd first started making out in his luxurious vulva months ago. I couldn't help but notice the sculpted edges of a six-pack that had formed and now led to the flawless circumference of his belly button and neatly trimmed bronze-colored happy trail. The only source of hair on his otherwise perfectly smooth canvas of an upper torso. I had seen him unclothed before. On nights he liked to come over and watch me sleep. He'd sometimes disrobe. I had no idea why. Maybe he was hot? And I only knew because I often pretended to sleep, but would super secretly open my eyes just a crack to watch him sitting there shamelessly manspreading, letting it all hang out. He was about as well endowed as Harvard. Looking now, it was clear he'd been working out. Edward noticed I was staring, so he leaned in and whispered in my ear, his voice halfway between a growl and a purr. Baseball Bella. Baseball. He led us to my bed. Charlie was out chopping wood or something, so it was just me and Edward and a few wolves howling in the distance. A sound I oddly craved when Edward wasn't around. Ladies first, he said, urging me onto my back. This was pleasant and new. It was usually the other way around, with Edward leaning against some wall and me on my knees doing the one job I thankfully wasn't clumsy at. Wait, I yelled, as though a thought had just occurred to me. I need to, go to the bathroom first. I ran down the hall, and once I was sure Edward hasn't followed me out of habit, I quickly scanned the innards of my panties. Nothing says tease like being on the rag when your boyfriend's a vampire. got back to my room, Edward was just as I'd left him, supple and divine. Ready? He asked with a wry smile, and I climbed back onto my bed. Edward briefly fidgeted with the camera, then slowly undid my jeans and peeled them from my legs. I could feel myself getting moist down there, and as he nuzzled my pelvic bone with his frigid but perfectly carved nose, a foreign exhalation washed over me. I realized he'd been doing this for decades now, and I felt so lucky to be in the throes of passion with someone so experienced. "Hey, Bella," Edward said suddenly, while he continued to caress my hip with his nostrils. "Mm-hmm," I responded, my eyes closed now. My desires were beginning to get the best of me. I wanted him to yank my panties off with his teeth. I wanted him to consume me. "I think it'd be really special if we named our tape." I thought hard for a moment, and I made an effort to be as clever as possible. "How about Cullenlingus?" Edward snorted, and the puff of air rustled my pubic hair through the cotton of my underwear. "Oh, Bella," he said, "you have some good ideas, but I'm afraid this isn't one of them." He hooked his thumbs in the waistband of my panties and began to make circular motions with his icy fingertips. I was so aroused, I shivered, but dared not ask him for what I really wanted. My mom, who is still my best friend and once gave me advice on these matters, said that goodness comes to those who wait. Let's call it the swan dive. I looked at him then, and Edward appeared so pleased with his own suggestion, I think it perfectly encapsulates my approach to our delicate situation here. "And," he added, "if there's one thing I've learned in life, it's that nothing is more romantic than having a sex act named after you." And that is the last assertive thing Edward told me before he slid off my underwear, before his head disappeared between my thighs, before I finally felt what it was like to be a real woman and come of age.
And that was Bella Swan, as written by Rebecca Rubenstein.
Rebecca Rubenstein, by the way, works at Booksmith and is the editor of Midnight Breakfast.
Up next, we have Jacob Black. I'm not sure if we should be weirded out by that or what. Like, I don't know if he's, but he's, I don't know.
He's sort of this like sad, forgotten old friend in the first book. When we meet him in this book, he's like scrawny and 5'10". Although he apparently will grow to be 6'7", with telepathic powers and superhuman strength. Oh, and he's a werewolf.
The phone rang in Bella's room. She was almost afraid to answer. Any voice but his voice would be a disappointment. It was Jessica calling about some dance. Bella did her best to sound supportive. "Mike kissed you. Good for you." "You big slut." "Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, girls love makeup. Okay. I'm gonna talk about Edward now. He looks at me with those black, shark eyes, and it makes me just want to die, you know? He's all, "I might rip your head off and gorge at the fountain of your lifeblood," and I'm like, "Edward, put a baby inside of me, and then rip it outside of me forever!" "Did someone say baby?" Jacob jumped into Bella's open window from a tree outside. "Hey, Jess. I gotta go. The other one is here." "Delete my number, okay? Bye." Bella hung up the phone and sighed. Jacob was shirtless and glistening wet. "Is it raining?" Bella asked. She hadn't heard any drops. No, it's just baby oil," Jacob said. "I thought we could go for a hike." "Edward doesn't want me to go hiking," Bella said. "Because you always fall?" " All right. Because you... All right. I am so sorry. Thank you. I laughed this hard when I read it in my living room. Oh my lord.
The microphone's not excited anymore.
Microphone's done. Thank you so much. All right. Because you always fall, Jacob asked. Because he doesn't think women should walk. Bella pulled a lock of hair in front of her face. It makes us too strong. Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Okay. Whew. All right, we can do this. We are gonna get through this. My roommates were like, what's going on out there? I was like, come read this. All right. Okay, so that's still going on. Do you two text? Bella pulled a second lock of hair in front of her face and spoke through them. No, I want him to show up. Then I just, no, if I want him to show up, I just balance on a stepladder with a bar. Oh my god. No, if I want him to show up, then I just balance on a stepladder with a box of swords, or like, fall asleep with my door locked. Besides, I'm not allowed to text in bed. I'll drop the phone on my... the phone on my face and slit my neck open. Jacob pursed his lips. Why is Edward so attached to you? He asked. Bella sighed a medium sigh, then a deeper one. She lowered her voice to a whisper. I'll tell you my secret. I intrigue Edward because he can't hear my thoughts. But Jacob, she had now fully covered her face with a curtain of hair. I don't have any thoughts. Bella got loud and excited. He's perfect. His alabaster ass is like a fine mound of brie with a crack right in where the honey goes. And in the sun, his skin glitters like the iridescent fabric you see on strippers and beanie babies. He's ancient. He remembers when the dinosaurs used to roam. He's only like 110. There weren't dinosaurs then, Jacob said. Bella bit her lip. He hunted them with his family and William Shakespeare and Anne Rice, Bella said. Jacob was getting angry, too angry. He took deep breaths to calm himself. He couldn't transform here, not when extra jean shorts were so far away. Bella, honey, Bella's father yelled from downstairs. The game must be over. Bella, I hear two distinct voices in there. You know what I said about boys in your room. He was coming up the stairs. I don't want you having sex and losing your metaphorical value. Charlie opened the door, his handsome face painted with surprise when he saw Jacob. Oh, Jacob, I thought it'd be the ashy one. Bella rolled her eyes. Charlie continued. Jacob, you're looking developed. How are the people? Charlie's eyes burned the topography of Jacob's torso. Oh, they're good, Mr. Swan. Hey, hey. Call me Chuck. Charlie leaned on Bella's doorframe and stroked his mustache. Bella, why don't you go read Wuthering Heights in the yard or something? What if I get lost? Bella scoffed. Yeah, that's fine. Just leave a note. Bella grabbed her CD player and then left the room with a sigh. She fell down the stairs. I am running out of water. All right. She fell down the stairs. We're good. I'm good. I'm sorry. Rolled across the living room and tumbled. Oh my god. Okay. Whew. All right. That girl has more monsters coming for her than the 2016 GOP seat. Charlie crossed to the window with a gentle laugh. Whew, it's a nice day. Hot, too. Is it hot in here? I'm hot in here. Charlie leaned to the windowsill and undid his top buttons, revealing a wild tangle of chest hair. Jacob, there's something you should know. Edward Cullen looks like an ashtray. A wreath wrapped around Jacob's heart. He had never heard someone say it out loud. Charlie sat down in the chair beside Jacob and smiled. Their knees touched. I mean, he's pretty, but not so pretty that you could never be prettier. He told Bella she smells beautiful. Beautiful? All humans smell like soap and American cheese. I would know. Charlie walked behind Jacob's chair and started rubbing his shoulders. Hey, shh. Let them have each other. Do you really want to spend your days staring at someone who looks like she's about to sneeze? Jacob growled softly and relaxed into Charlie's strong hands. He calls me Baby Jacob. I age in dog years. I'm 112, Jacob said. You're older than I am, Charlie said. I hope our little age gap doesn't bother you. Trust me, age gaps never bothered me, Jacob said. No. Charlie walked in front, squirted lotion into his hand, and started massaging more deeply. Jacob's head rolled back and Charlie got on his knees. He named each muscle in Jacob's eight-pack after a hill in San Francisco. Then took his tongue down Lombard. He unbuttoned Jacob's jeans and oraled him for several minutes before deciding that he was ready. Jacob, you're not the only one who can transform. Charlie left the room and came back wearing a German Shepherd mascot head, a collar and a jockstrap with a furry tail. Jacob became as hard as a three-syllable word. Fuck Bella, Charlie growled. He got on all fours and waved his willing ass. I'm the only bitch you need. Wait, Jacob rose. He grabbed a Sharpie from Bella's desk and drew a blurry circle on Charlie's shoulder. You're one of the pack now, Jacob said, gruffy into Charlie's giant, furry ears. Jacob gently slipped his alpha male into Charlie's doggy door, and they both howled. They began to buck in time, and Charlie's soft snarls turned into shouts. Harder! Harder! Charlie yelled. Jacob thrusted with more and more force, but Charlie's thirst was unquenched. Harder! Harder! He yelled. Jacob was pounding him with all his pound. They were inches away from climax, but it wasn't enough. I bet Edward could do it, Charlie said with a poisonous laugh. Uncontrollable anger ripped through Jacob, and just as Charlie had hoped, he transformed while still inside. First, rang from his shoulders, his mouth filled with fangs, and Jacob beasted into five times his human size. Charlie's satisfied howls were all the encouragement Jacob needed to keep going. He placed a warm paw on Charlie's lower back and finished in true doggy style. They lay on the floor in a lover's nest of rumpled sheets and sweat. Charlie brushed a lock of hair behind Jacob's ear, and they smiled at each other. Still thinking about Bella? Charlie asked. No, just you, Jacob said, and a 1986 Volkswagen Master Cylinder. The end.
That was returning champ Joe Wadlington with Jacob Black.
So I don't know if you noticed, but our reader, like, totally, completely lost his shit a couple of times. Like, he actually laughed so hard at one point during that piece that he knocked over the microphone.
This next one, I think, requires a little bit of explanation.
Okay, so I can do that. I can supply that. So if you guys have seen the movie, and we don't usually do this. We don't usually just, like, assign people a scene. We assign people characters. But if you've seen the movie, I think that the baseball scene is, like, the funniest, most ridiculous, absurd, like, early 2000s example of, like, what early... I mean, how do you want to say this? You've seen it, right?
I read the book. I feel like it's an absurd scene in the book.
It's absurd in the book, but in the movie, it raises the level of absurdity to an art form. It's like they took, like, early, you know, kind of, like 2008 level special effects and applied them to give a family of vampires super strength to bat super hard and run super fast with in a lightning storm. Because, by the way, they can only do it during a lightning storm because they bat so hard that the sound, it sounds like thunder. So there has to be thunder, or else they can't play baseball because everyone will know that they're vampires.
This baseball game is different than the last. The sun is down and Bella and I are alone. A storm sounds in the distance, but the sky over the baseball diamond is clear, and the reflected light from the moon makes my skin shine. More a single sparkler than a whole pack, but enough to dazzle her. My hands are careful around Bella's, and I correct her stance. Playing just the two of us is not as fun as I thought. It takes no effort to strike her out or send her pitches miles away with a crack like thunder. Edward, I'll never get this. I'm a klutz. Come on, Bella. You can't just give. And then I hear something in the woods. Bella, you need to go. What? She looks up at me. Her eyes with their constant, watery, wall-eyed state that always look on the verge of crying. There's someone out there. She looks terrified, or maybe constipated. It's hard to tell. I hear the quiet scrape of felt against spark. The fear leaves, and the tension moves lower around my suddenly rigid lightsaber. Run! Bella, go! But... I promise you I'll be fine. With one last watery look, she rushes into the underbrush. Immediately, I hear her fall. Get up and fall again. I hope she survives.
Oh my god!
I'm sorry. I'm gonna be fine. This is a good show. I hope she survives the trip. When I can no longer hear her trip, I'm already hard. My shaft upright, shining like a Rockefeller Christmas tree it is. Then, he calls. One glorious glowing twink, naked, even glorious. she emerges from the tree line. Purple skin, darker in the reflected light of me. My eyes drink him in. Count von Count. When he's close enough, I drop to my knees and face him eye to eye. What are you doing here? I slide my hand across the rough texture of his cheek, the softness of his teeth, the glassy hardness of his eyes. His hand wraps around my tumescent flashlight, and it feels like fucking felt heaven.
We're on break, so I come to you.
The Count works in television. First smile time, and now he lives on a street with other souls that are cursed into puppets. They get good ratings, though. There's no more talking. We fall on each other, my hand running under his cape, my nails scrape on the edge of his puppet hole, and he shivers in my arms.
How many fingers can I take? One wonderful whole fist up my puppet hole.
Inside he is velvet and humid. Sweat drips down my arm. I wiggle my fingers inside of him as his small hand moves down to my taint. Little threads of purple cling to my sweaty skin. The softness of his thick fangs rake my hip. He whistles and his fats, Grisha, Misha, Sasha, and Bill appear and grab each a corner of his cape and slowly lift him off my hand. I stare at my glowing fingers, bits of purple clinging to them. It looks like I've been fisting Barney. I bring my hand to my mouth and lick the taste of his puppet hole. Tastier than blood, than Bella even. I dig my tongue into the spaces between my fingers, determined to get every scrap of taste. Purple is still my favorite flavor. His bats drop him onto my legs. His open mouth is a vast circle of black, broken only by the pink of his paper-thin triangle tongue. It waves in the air, slapping the head of my luminous rocket. I follow the landing signals and guide myself in until I hit the back of his mouth and curse the lack of a throat. The Count's laugh is muffled. He rotates his head until my cock sits in his shallow mouth like a radioactive hot dog in a tall purple bun. A true San Francisco treat. He closes his mouth around me and a deliciously rough tongue wraps around the head, melts to it like a suckled fruit roll-up around a finger. He shakes his head back and forth, massaging my glow stick with the hard fabric-covered cardboard of his mouth until I explode like Krakatoa, matting the felt of his cheek. My roar of orgasm shakes the treetops and I'm grateful the storm will disguise it. Count rips open his trousers to reveal his dick, a small, plump, purple fruit resting close to his crotch. I stare at it hungrily, like a rodent about to eat her own young. He smiles, fangs on full display.
They refelted my body before the break. Would you like a taste?
I rise and crawl on all fours to take him in my mouth. The felt smells slightly like cotton candy on my tongue.
Nibble upon it.
I pull my teeth slightly along the surface.
Enough! Turn around!
I scramble to obey. A small hand smacks my right ass cheek, then left.
One cheek! Two cheeks! Two curvaceous cheeks for me!
The silk of his pants rubs the back of my thighs as his dick pops in and out of me, catching on my rim with every shove.
1, 2, 3 thrusts for the twink. 4, 5, 6 thrusts.
I lose myself in the numbers. Each little jab of his mushroom dick sending me higher. When I cry out and come a second time, wolves miles away howl in response. I flip over and fall limp to the ground, my release streaking the grass and my body with pearly luminescence like the contents of a lava lamp. The count rises above me, walking up my thighs and chest. He rubs at the small nodule of dick left. I'm showered in flakes of purple. He shudders, his body collapsing on itself as he comes.
This has been brought to you by my cock!
He screams and sprays. Comes irregular cotton balls from his body. They fall soft across my eyelids and cheeks.
One cum shot!
Another volley of the small white balls hit my chest.
Two cum shots!
A final dribble of soft whiteness splashes on my cock.
Three combustive cum shots for me!
He collapses on me, his frame lighter, drained of most of his stuffing by his orgasms.
They'll have to refut again, me, as soon as I get back.
I look down at the flat surface where his dick used to be, rubbed away by my diamond asshole and his palm.
You know,
you can always come with me. His accent is softer now, almost gone. You know I can't. My answer is a sigh, and he says, goodbye, diamond boy. Then he is gone, his bats carrying him high above the trees and far away. I should go find Bella, but I rest my head on home plate, remembering and rubbing pieces of purple felt into my damp skin.
Ready for another?
My eyes shoot open as another small figure walks from the woods, draped in black, the same size as Count, but of different coloring, pale skin, and yellow-red eyes. I smile as I recognize him. Show me what you've got, puppet Angelus. Bella can wait a little bit longer. The end.
So that was The Baseball Game, with apologies to Naaman Tilahun.
Yeah, that piece was sublime.
But seriously, we wouldn't...
Oh, sorry.
Unless there's a really good reason, we're not going to assign a scene to people. This is a one-off. Who knows? I can't think of a lot of scenes that I want to assign to people.
This is the only one that I personally care about.
Oh, so good, though. Thank you, Naaman.
So finally, we get to Edward Cullen, who is obviously the one that everybody wants to hear about. So he's a vampire with a dark side, and he's opted in to remaining a teenager for all of eternity. Disbelief suspended. I will leave you with this. The Urban Dictionary entry for Edward Cullen says, and I quote, "A psycho who goes into girls' bedrooms to watch them sleep may or may not sparkle."
As a telepathic, vampiric, nonagenarian trapped in the body of a 17-year-old twink, Edward spent a lot of time scanning the thoughts of those around him, then despairing at how alike everyone's mind was. Now that Carlisle was forcing him to attend an Exodus Pray Away the Perversion weekend, he was chagrined to find that the same held true even there. The same cycle of arousal and self-abnegation in every man expressed except the one, who just seemed resigned to the fact that this wasn't going to work. He hadn't expected that being around a bunch of decidedly gay men striving to repress thoughts they deemed sinful would make him horny, but it did. All the repressed eroticism was, in a strange way, delicious. They were on hair trigger, and despite himself, the predator instinct to toy with one's prey could not be entirely restrained. All he had to do was lean over to pick up a drop Bible, and he received a rush of desperate praying mixed with graphic thoughts about what they wanted to do to him. Remember bread, he told himself, and endeavored to pay attention to why his lifestyle was sinful. The charged atmosphere may have spurred the feelings along, but the other man, who wasn't really buying into it, was definitely attractive. Tall, broad, dark gelled up hair, and very pale, with a strong square jaw and dark brooding eyes. He seemed like the kind of guy that would hit the gym and then hang around in a graveyard and feel sorry for himself. In other words, he was exactly Edward's type. At the end of the day, Edward, the man who held his attention, and six other would-be straight men returned to their shared rooms. The staff had looked uncomfortable when he asked them why they weren't paired off instead. "It's because they're worried we're gonna fuck," said the guy he'd been staring at. "I mean, not us two necessarily, any of us, all of us." Edward smiled at him. "Should they be, you think?" The guy smiled back. He wasn't grimly reciting a prayer now that Edward's full attention was on him. "Yes." Edward had a look around. He was happy he was attending this retreat in the middle of nowhere in Colorado. Everyone here fit the rugged lumberjack cowboy aesthetic the state was famous for. And many of them clearly sublimated their self-loathing into vigorous exercise routines. Remember Brett. As everyone else undressed for bed and Edward prepared to spend several hours pretending to sleep, he found himself remembering Brett, his mechanic's rough hands, the persistent smell of mortar oil, the warm huffing breaths against his cold neck while Brett fucked him against a wall. He sighed. Bad thoughts? The other man had gotten surprisingly close to him without Edward noticing. Something like that. "Tomorrow they'll have us do exercises together. Lift weights and stuff. Show us how to be real men." "This isn't your first time here?" "My fifth," the man said. "I'm not known for my continual restraint in the face of temptation." "Neither am I," replied Edward, and kissed him. Because that was the point of, what was the point of living forever if you couldn't make some mistakes? It didn't feel like a mistake. As their tongues connected, he could feel the vivid pulsations of the blood running through his sparring partners. He didn't even know the man's name. He hadn't been paying attention. Andrew? Something like Andrew? He ran his hands through the man's gel hair, revealing the stickiness it left behind as he allowed himself to be led over to bed. Humans were normally so tangential to this life, but right now, Andrew's tongue and mouth and hips grinding against his own felt essential. He listened for the thoughts of the others, waiting for someone to think of putting a stop to what he and Andrew were doing, but no one did. They were just staring. "You're wearing too much," Andrew said, and Edward agreed. He stripped off his faggy oatmeal cardigan and long-sleeved shirt. His skin glowed under the full spectrum light bulbs in their hotel room, a more subdued luster than the full-on sparkle evinced by sunlight. As he and Andrew stripped, there was a collective gasp at their daring. Amazingly, some of the other men started to do the same. The more cautious among them were watching from their beds, surreptitiously adjusting themselves. No one said anything, but one of the guys tossed Andrew a bottle of lotion. Edward normally prepared for getting fucked. There was nothing to clean, as vampires didn't poop. But his past paramours had complained that it was cold, so he usually put a combination of a hot water bottle, butt plug in his ass for at least 15 minutes to prevent the feeling that they were plowing something the temperature of a cool spring day. If Andrew noticed that when he put a finger in, he didn't let on. They locked eyes as Andrew gave him a second finger, and then a third. It felt like the entire room was holding its breath as the man lined himself up with Edward's temperate hole. Edward sighed and wriggled back on it. One of the benefits of decades of experience was taking cock like a champ. He had felt guilty about getting fucked at first, until he realized that by being a total bottom, he could preserve his virginity for a good Christian girl. After that, it had seemed only natural. As Andrew's pace increased, it was all Edward could do to not get himself off. A third man, Simon, stepped forward and took that task upon himself. Hard to believe that this was the same man who hours earlier had shared a story of being revolted by his own feelings of same-sex attraction. Edward supposed there was something Christian in his selflessness. But when Andrew came and slackened, Simon assumed Andrew's former position. One by one, the other men he'd thrown his lot. One by one, the other men he'd thrown his lot in with in this dilapidated Motel 6 stepped forward, stripped, and fucked him. He felt warmer with each successive load inside of him. The natural glimmer of his skin, shiny with sweat. Each time they came, it was a benediction. A balm that undid some of the bizarre shit they'd done earlier in the day. They dedicating themselves to heterosexuality. When the last one finished, Mark maybe? Maybe Matthew? Edward barely had to touch himself before his load exploded all over the bed. The end.
And that was Edward Cullen by an anonymous donor. Oh my god.
An anonymous donor who may or may not sparkle.
Finally.
All right. Finally. Renee Dwyer is Bella's train wreck mom. And I don't know about you guys, but like, I just really want her in there as someone who's like spent 10 years in therapy talking about their mothers. Like, she's just a disaster. She's like married to a minor league baseball player who travels around. So she was just like, sorry, Bella, my minor league baseball player husband. She really likes baseball. My minor league baseball player husband has to travel a lot. So why don't you go live with your dad? That's their story.
Renee Dwyer was 45 and sexier than ever. She hadn't let herself go just because she was married and had a teenage daughter. No, she dyed her gray hairs blonde and went to Zumba 3 times a week. Okay, so she had a big booty, but big booties were in fashion now, you know, like J-Lo. But her husband Phil appreciated none of that. Maybe it was the steroids he took for his minor league baseball career. Or maybe it was just that he didn't know how good he had it. Kind of like a certain other husband I can't think of who is also married to an extremely sexy 45-year-old woman. Renee had tried everything to arouse Phil's interest. She bought sexy dice, sexy handcuffs, and all the other sexy items her friends suggested. She ordered tasteful couples pornography on pay-per-view. She even tried to entice Phil with baseball metaphors so he could understand. Let's go! All the way around the bases, she would say, trailing a finger suggestively over his beer gut. Why don't you let me deflate your balls? Babe, that's not even the right sport. Phil would sigh because he didn't understand women. Much like many husbands of a gorgeous 45-year-old, including one in particular named Jeff. One day, Renee concocted a plan that would be sure to entice her ungrateful husband into having relations with her. She filled their bedroom with penis-shaped candles, sparkly personal lubricants, and a makeshift stripper pole. The finest Spencer's Gifts had to offer. Then, as he sat on the couch watching Dancing with the Stars, she leaned over and whispered hotly in his ear, "It's time to let your fat boy hit a foul ball." That's right. She was gonna let him do her in the boot. There was a minor problem, which was that she did have a few hemorrhoids. Because who doesn't have 45? But she was taking care of it. She was eating more fiber and stuff. She was sure everything would go fine. Anyway, Renee retreated to the bedroom and got naked except for a G-string made of little candies, which she had also purchased from the sexpert at Spencer's Gifts. She began to gyrate around the stripper pole using all the hottest moves she learned in Zumba. The cumbia sleepy leg, the merengue lunge, and yes, even the travel salsa. When Phil walked in, he'd see her carnal writhing, as good as any contestant on Dancing with the Stars. And he'd be so dazzled that he'd have to take her to bed immediately. And if he didn't, he'd be a huge hypocrite who was just using TV to avoid intimacy. Kind of like a little someone named, oh, I don't know, Jeff. As she mambo-squatted her way around the collapsible pole, she accidentally gripped at it a little too tight. Ouch! She cried, like a lusty, naughty, injured person. A drop of blood seeped out from her finger where it had scraped against a screw. At that moment, the bedroom door creaked open. Renee looked up and was shocked to see not Phil, but Edward. Her daughter Bella's handsome, socially kind of off boyfriend. Renee used her toned but not too muscular arms to cover her breasts, which now weren't what they used to be. But they were still pretty great considering she gave birth and nursed a child. Like, sorry if participating in the miracle of life is too much for you, Jack. Bella's not home now, Renee exclaimed. But Edward seemed not to have heard her. He sniffed the air like a dog sniffs another dog's asshole. What is that enticing smell? He said. What do you mean? Renee asked. Edward was already beside her, gently drawing her wounded hand away from her bosom. He lifted her finger to his mouth and began to suck. Your blood. He gasped. It's even sweeter than Bella's. He stripped naked with superhuman speed. And also somehow seemed to have located the glittery lube and applied it to his entire body. Renee unclasped her arms and slowly, delicately, seductively resumed her Zumba moves. Finally. Here was a red-blooded American man who could handle her and all her resplendent womaninity. But wait, she hesitated sexily. Are you even 18? Yeah, I'm like 100, he said. I'm a vampire. Okay, she said. And all I want is to taste you, he added. Okay, she said. Bill hadn't gone down on her in ages. Renee ripped off her candy undies and spread her legs in a ravishing mambo squat. Edward sank to his knees, taking a long whiff off her crotch. The smell is even stronger down here, he groaned. It's coming from... Oh, of course. In one fluid motion, Edward bent Renee over the bed, spread her patootie cheeks, and with his tongue, began to lap at the sweet nectar of her hemorrhoid. Oh, yeah. Welcome to Booksmith. No one had ever licked the swollen veins. No one has ever licked her this way. No one had ever licked the swollen veins in and around Renee's tushy hole before, but she quickly realized she loved it. In fact, it was one of the best sensations she'd ever experienced. And as the hemorrhoid started to open up and bleed, Edward's tolerance became even more vigorous, driving Renee in higher and higher places of ecstasy. She was on the edge of orgasm when she heard the bedroom door creak open again. There stood Phil, his hands on his hips. What the hell is going on? He demanded, his neck beard bristling. Edward paused, his tongue still firmly ensconced in Renee's butt pussy. Phil held them in his minor league gaze. You didn't tell me Edward was gonna be here, he said. This changes everything. In a flash, Phil was nude. His steroid shrunken balls curled up between his legs like two scrumptious salted cashews.
Creech fell upon Edwin and Renee in a flurry of sucking and thrusting, and thus began the most incredible night of passion any of the three of them had ever known. As the Spencerian penis candles burned down, Phil pleasured Edward, Edward pleasured Renee, Phil even did Renee in the booty, and let Edward lick the hemorrhoid blood off his dick. Finally, Renee cried out, "Oh yes, baby, yes! Throw that curveball into the dugout!" All three of them came exactly at the same time, and it was super perfect and super awesome. And Renee and Phil had a totally fulfilling sex life from then on and never had any relationship problems ever again. And that, Jeff, is why you need to stop being such a prude and let us have a threesome with Brayden, the 18-year-old intern at my office.
That was Renee Dwyer as imagined by Lauren O'Neill, another contributor to Midnight Breakfast. Seriously, Midnight Breakfast. Don't mess around on this.
She's done Shipwreck. She's done Right Club a bunch of times too, right?
She did it once.
The point is, she's hilarious, she's got, and you should read everything she wrote. She also, I think, she wrote for the Toast a couple of times too.
Yeah, she's actually pretty accomplished.
She's legit.
But leave the actually out. She's pretty accomplished.
She's like legit. So we finally wrecked Twilight. We did it.
And we know we can dip back into this well every year if we want.
There's
several books.
There's like four more books. I think we deserve to go have a beer now. That's what I think we deserve. Nice. Let's do that.
We should play some baseball.
Hey, let's go play baseball. We should start a Shipwreck baseball league.
I'm actually kind of into that.
You know, people talk about crazy stuff, but whatever, it doesn't matter that much. Hey, do you want to just, you know, get ice cream and walk down by the beach?
It's not because I like you or anything. I just really want ice cream.
I'm cool and non-threatening, but I'm also pretty sexy.